The following is a Relevant Radio program and is protected under U.S. copyright laws. This program is made possible through the contributions of listeners like you. Support Relevant Radio by clicking on the donate icon at www.relevantradio.com.
And now, broadcasting to your universe, it's the Drew Mariani Show.
We want the Iranian regime to feel the full weight of the international community from these measures.
If crude prices go up, obviously gasoline prices are going to go up. Supply and demand is fine. So what's led to this most recent run-up? Obviously, concerns about the rhetoric over the closing of the Straits of Hormuz and the conflicts with Iran.
As long as what happens from the ISDA happens as we expect it to, that they do call this effectively an orderly default and thus triggering CDSs, I think we've avoided perhaps a bigger catastrophe for the short term.
Now the youth are waking up. These are children and young people, 25 and younger, are saying, Mom, Dad, we want you to pay attention to this right now. It's now. The power of doing it now, not later, not next year.
This is the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey, good afternoon, everyone. Welcome back. About 6 minutes after the hour. It's good to be with you today. We got a full show, as always, ahead. I had the great privilege of speaking a little bit earlier today to Cardinal Wuerl. He came out with a new book called Seek First the Kingdom. You got to stay tuned for that. 4 o'clock, he's going to talk about an issue that I think every citizen should be plugged into. And that is the cultural and the moral, the both the civic and our spiritual duty as citizens in this country. So great conversation with him. I'll share some of that coming up a little bit later. And, of course, I'm going to get you plugged in at the bottom of the 3 o'clock hour Central Time to a bizarre story. This is absolutely horrific. Did you hear about the woman? She gave birth a couple years ago. Her story actually went to court, and the jury's deliberating right now. She was diagnosed. She was pregnant. A geneticist, doctor said, hey, there's nothing wrong with your baby. The baby was born, had Down syndrome, and she's now suing. She actually sued for $3.6 million for wrongful birth. Yeah, what? Wrongful birth. You guys heard me right. Wrongful birth. Have you ever heard of anything so insane? Wrongful birth. She said if she would have known, she would have killed the child. She would have aborted that child. Is that not twisted? Oh, by the way, she loves the kid now. It's beautiful. 4 years old. It's beautiful. Maybe I'll post the story at Facebook. You see this adorable little baby. I mean, this little girl. She's adorable. Is it on the show page? Cassie put it up at our show page. You can check that story out there, relevantradio.com, keyword Drew. Amazing, an amazing story. We're going to take a look at that because it ties into a lot of other issues too, such as these ethicists who are arguing for the acceptance of, the murder of a child, an after-birth abortion is what they call it. So it's strange. You know, are you better off dead than disabled? That's the mindset of the culture. We'll break that down with Wesley Smith a little bit later today. And of course, coming up, if you struggle with overeating, quite often when I deal with different issues, there was one woman who called me several times and said, hey, look, why don't you deal with this compulsion to eating? Do you eat when you're stressed out? I sometimes do. Do you eat when you're under pressure or you're nervous or when you're sad? Do you eat for the sake of eating, just because it's pleasurable and it's good? You know, you might not even be hungry, but you're like, oh, it's dinner time. Oh, you know, it's late and I kind of feel kind of hungry. I'm going to snack on something. Do you eat too much? Do you overeat? Boy, when I was younger in my 20s, my my brother-in-laws and I, boy, we could put a hurting on a buffet. I'll tell you that much. They'd take a loss on us. We could pack it away. Not so much today, but I still love to eat, and that's my problem. I mean, how do you govern how much you eat? We're going to talk a little bit about addiction to food. Lots of addictions out there, everything to porn and alcohol and drugs. But what about food? That's a big one, and I thought I would honor that request from one of my listeners to address that today, especially in light of what today is. Today is Friday, right? And believe it or not, we are called to fast. I spoke to somebody yesterday and says, oh, you know, that's just tradition, this whole fasting thing. You know, the church isn't really, this person, by the way, went to a Catholic school. I won't identify it. They said to me, that's just tradition. Church started that because, you know, they wanted to sell more seafood and fish up in Milan a long time ago. And, you know, I'm like, who told you that? Are you kidding me? Oh, no, we learned that, you know, at this school. I mean, I really? Really? It was a an economic thing, and now it's become tradition in the church? I want to clarify that for anybody else out there who may think that this is true. Fridays across the board, I learned this from Dr. Mark Miravalli, who's been a frequent guest on my show, not just during Lent especially. I mean, I'm really trying this Lent to really, really work on my spiritual life. I don't know how you're doing. I hope you're being disciplined. I'm really trying to deny myself by fasting and by making sacrifices, by doing what the church requires. And you know what? There's a freedom in it. I found myself empowered, find myself rising above temptation. I find my mind becoming clearer and more focused on things of God and making good decisions as opposed to sometimes succumbing to those bad decisions, you know? And on Fridays across the board, Dr. Miravalli once told me, he says, the church is clear. We have to fast. We have to do some sort of sacrifice on that day. It's a day that our Lord Jesus Christ, he hung on a cross and he died for us. And this has been a day that Christians, you know, it's been marked by, you know, fasting and abstaining for centuries. For a long time, Catholics couldn't eat meat, and then the church after Vatican II changed that. And honestly, and this is not for me to say, but, if those who don't fast, boy, Wednesday and Friday, Ash Wednesday and Good Friday can be really tough for you, right? But fundamentally, it's pretty easy. You know, people think, oh, I have to fast 2 days a week. No, you got to fast. We should be making some sort of sacrifices on Fridays. Every Friday is set aside by the church as a special day of penance. So, you know, this is Friday for many of you listening. You know what? What are you offering up today? What sacrifice have you made? How are you honoring the death of our Lord? You know, the bishops have decided to kind of reestablish the practice, and this should be, we can do it on Wednesdays and Fridays, basically during, Ash Wednesday, Good Fridays, I say, but during Fridays throughout Lent, I really hope, in addition to just giving up meat, as a lot of people do, you'll do more. I hope you'll really think about how you can sacrifice in a special way. And don't do it because you have to. Do it out of love for God. Do it out of love for God. You know, I was talking with His Eminence, Cardinal Wuerl, earlier today, and we were talking about the faithful and how the culture really is poorly catechized. It really is. You know, Catholics aren't even aware. And this was news to me, too. And believe me, I went to many years of Catholic education. I didn't know I was expected to sacrifice something on Fridays outside of Lent. You know, but that's what the church requires us. We are in Lent. And I really ask you to please prayerfully consider offering something up today. And there's a difference between fasting and also dieting. And I know some people think, oh, I'll do this to lose weight. You know, it's a way that I can, I can fast, but I can also, take advantage and lose a few pounds. Yeah, I guess you could do that by denying yourself. But I came across a really interesting article, and I want to share it with you. It was somebody who was a convert to the Catholic faith, and they basically they wrote an article saying fasting versus dieting, and I thought this was pretty interesting. I saw this last week, and I'll share it. I don't know who wrote it, but I think it came from the Catholic Free Press. And this is what they said. They said, Catholics never forget their converts because everything we learn about Catholicism is compared to our prior experiences. So, you know, I offer my insight. Fasting to me was a completely new concept to me, as it probably was to many people outside the church. The closest I ever came to it was a diet. And I took dieting to a disordered point, to an unhealthy extreme as a young adult trying to maintain really what was abnormal body weight. Now I fast each year during Lent, and always briefly takes me back to that confused, dark, and lost days where memories, deepen my gratitude for precepts, the rules for moral conduct of the Holy Mother Church. Anyway, my dieting was probably a mild form of anorexia, this person says. I did it to exalt myself, to exercise some control in an otherwise out-of-control lifestyle. Ironically, it was an indulgence of vanity and pride, and it was not driven by moral consideration, but by fear. You know, young people sometimes seek a free lifestyle, but unlimited freedom only makes you a slave to your vices. I love that. That is so true. Let me repeat that line that this person wrote. Unlimited freedom only makes makes you a slave to your vices. When it hurt to be hungry, she said, I fall back, resisted it, and won. The pain became addicting because it represented success. But really, the message in my mind was that I was unlovable unless I was thin. And I resented that. Dieting became a form of rebellion against society, against myself, for not being worth more. It's a vicious cycle, and it will kill you if you let it. The church, she says, fasting, on the other hand, is an act of temperance, a finding in the dictates, finding it in the dictates of natural law. See, within the church, suffering has a purpose rooted in a desire to grow in holiness and to humbly do penance for sins in order to grow closer to God. When it hurts to miss a meal, the pain's to remind you that grace is abundant and that you are not a slave to your flesh because you can master your temptations. Thus, your heart becomes truly free. Fasting also reminds you that you belong to a community of faith, one body united by the grace of Christ, striving in hope for eternal communion with God. You see, fasting is part of the liturgical cycle. The end of fasting is not death, but rather celebration of life and salvation, because Christ conquered death for all of us. And that's the real difference. Temporal diets may fail, but fasting, it ends with a feast. And I just thought that was so insightful. I love that, because so often we do get the picture wrong. You know, when we fast, we rise above our flesh. We conquer our temptations. We dispel our vices. You know, we become people of virtue. We allow the breath of the Holy Spirit to inflame our heart to desire God more and to make those decisions for things that are good and true and beautiful. Fasting is not a death, but in the end, it's a celebration. And as she points out, it ends in a feast. I love that. Got to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk more. You can join me here toll-free at 877-ROME-777, 877-ROME-777. Feel free to give us a call. We'll also take a look at addiction to food, overeating, that type of compulsion. If you struggle with that, listen. If you got a loved one who's going through that, turn up the radio or have them listen online at relevantradio.com. We're back with more right after this.
Catholic Talk Radio, more relevant than ever. Relevant Radio.
I want to let you know that I'm a first-time donor this week, and in part, it's because I'm so proud of Relevant Radio. Oh. Proud of you guys for standing up. I'm proud of you for talking positive about the bishop.
Relevant Radio.
I do not believe 40 Days for Life would be even half of what it is today were it not for Catholic Radio and Relevant Radio, because you're helping people to see the importance of those three pillars: prayer, education, and action.
Relevant Radio.
I'm one of your evangelical sisters in Christ. I just wanted to express that the Roman Catholic Church is like a lamp on a hill for the rest of us. And call today. I'm a first-time donor.
Help Relevant Radio continue its vital mission. Call now, 1-877-291-0123. That's 1-877-291-0123. Or donate online at relevantradio.com.
This is Dave Vacheris, General Manager of the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
This is Father Rocky Hoffman, Executive Director of Relevant Radio.
And this is Father Walter Tonelotto, and I am the Priest Director of Radio Maria USA.
The Catholic radio stations of the United States have joined together in support of our bishops in this critical time in the life of the Church.
As you know, the federal government recently announced a so-called preventive services mandate. Under this mandate, Catholic organizations, including hospitals, schools, and broadcasters like us, will soon have to offer contraceptives and abortion-inducing drugs within our insurance plans.
This is something we clearly cannot and will not do. Our bishops have spoken out with a clear and unified voice. This is a violation of the First Amendment to our Constitution and is a direct assault on religious liberty.
We encourage our listeners from coast to coast to contact their members of Congress to express their concerns with this plan. You can do this through the Catholic Bishops' website, usccb.org.
This site will keep you informed of the latest news and information regarding this mandate.
Please pray and fast for the intention of rescinding this mandate. The holy season of Lent is an excellent time to do this.
And on behalf of Catholic Radio in the United States, we are asking for your prayers too. Please support your local stations and those who bring you the Catholic programs you love. Thank you.
This is the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
We'll be right back. All right, closing in on about 20 after the hour. Good afternoon, everyone. Hey, welcome back. So good to be here with you today. I love being able to bridge the gap between faith and everyday life. And look, there are a lot of struggles we all face. So often we indulge when we are wounded, when we are hurt, in times of stress, in times of anxiety. Some people turn to alcohol. Some people turn to drugs. Some people turn to sex. Some people turn to food. And food addiction, I think, is a growing problem in this country. We all know the problem in this country and even around the world. I mean, obesity is on the rise, and it's been for a long time. I remember one time I was I took a trip to Ireland. I was on a pilgrimage back in like 2002, and we visited Ireland, beautiful, the Cliffs of Moher. If anyone's ever been there, you know what they're like. And some members of the group that he was with, they were getting back onto this bus, and an Irishman and his wife, they were coming towards him, and they actually overheard the conversation between this Irish couple. And the man turned to his wife and says, "My gosh, those guys are Americans and they're thin?" You know, because Americans I always personally marvel at this when I go to Europe. I mean, Europeans eat so wonderfully, and yet they're all thin. And I think a lot of that is because they walk. I mean, we sit and we drive everywhere, but in Europe, there's a lot of walking as well. But that problem became a lot worse. You know, the latest U.S. statistics, they come from, I think, 2008. They show about 34% of adults are obese, you know, and another 34.4% of the adults, almost 35% are overweight but not obese. So you're talking about a huge section of a huge, you know, portion of our populations, two-thirds of our country, two-thirds of the U.S., is struggling with you know, weight issues, if not obesity. And that's a huge problem for the health of our society, for a whole litany of things. You know, you think about issues like health care, military readiness, the size of seats in public buildings or on airplanes. I mean, all these stories keep coming up. And something that may be contributing to the problem, I think, is a food addiction. We become a very addicted culture. How many people are addicted to eating in order to calm their nerves? Are you one of those? Do you just overeat because it feels good? There's not a whole lot of data on that. There's not a whole lot of statistics on this issue. That's why I invited to the program today Dr. Liana Bennett. She is a clinician at the Alpha Omega Clinic and has worked with children and adults and couples, a whole spectrum of people. And she utilizes a variety of treatment approaches and strongly believes in what she says is a collaborative relationship between client and therapist, and she's having great success. We'll tap into her experience, her knowledge, and try to get some understanding of this issue. Doctor, good afternoon.
Hi, Drew. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Oh, I'm delighted. This is an issue that I know resonates with a lot of our listeners, and that's a no-brainer when you look at the stats. Two-thirds of Americans struggle with weight. At least a third, 34% of them are obese. One out of three children, the same thing. Why are we seeing such rises in these types of numbers, and why are we as Americans struggling with obesity the way we are?
Well, I think something that you mentioned is that a lot of times people look to food to help us feel better about ourselves. As a culture, food is a very important part of our culture. It's, you know, something significant that we gather around the table together. Food is often present in times of celebration and joy. So we have a lot of good associations with food, we should have those. Food is something that should bring enjoyment to us. But what happens is that sometimes people have these hurts and these wounds that they try to heal with food. And that's where people can start to really struggle. So, you know, you might have people who they have these negative emotional experiences, and, you know, perhaps one of the ways that they seek to deal with those is through eating, through, you know, we talk about comfort foods, you know, those foods that make us happy. But sometimes people can, you know, abuse those foods, and then comes feelings of shame and guilt, and when they don't know how to then deal with those feelings appropriately, can get into a pretty bad cycle trying to deal with them.
You know, sometimes people throw in the towel. They try, they diet, they do whatever they need to do, and then they set themselves up for failure. I think diets are really a they're a dangerous thing. I don't think they're a bad thing. I think what you need to do is change your lifestyle and approach this the right way. A lot of people who deny themselves inevitably will give in at some point in time, and then they overeat, you know, or they'll overindulge and think, oh, what the heck? I've already eaten this much already. Well, why not have some more? And they kind of fall off the wagon. How can people know if they're addicted to food or whether they're not? You know, how do you identify the signs of gosh, I have a problem, or, you know, I just need to stop eating a little bit? How do you identify these signs?
Well, usually what we look to is behavior which is beyond what is normal within our population. So, for example, in psychology, we talk about binge eating disorder. And for something to be classified that way, you have to have what are considered binge eating episodes, which is where somebody eats more than the normal amount of food that would be appropriate in a given situation. So we all have times where we overeat, mm-hmm. and that's completely normal. You know, at Thanksgiving, for example, everybody eats till they get stuffed, and uncomfortably so.
Yeah.
But when you have somebody who's eating like it's Thanksgiving on a normal everyday occasion, or snacking in the middle of the night like it's Thanksgiving, then eating to the point of being overly full, and then adding feelings of guilt and shame on top of that, and having this occur fairly regularly, say on a weekly basis for a significant period of time, that's when we would consider it a significant, like, food addiction or mm-hmm. eating disorder. Now, people can, of course, struggle with food addictions on a range of different ways, and, you know, this sort of binge eating disorder is just one example of it.
Yeah.
And people can struggle with it without having necessarily these sort of binges. We see binge eating disorder between 5 and 10% of people who are obese. So
that's
not
small.
Everybody who is obese or has weight problems necessarily has what would be considered a binge eating disorder.
At what part or what age do these disorders happen? I mean, you've got all sorts of eating issues, bulimia, anorexia, binge eating. Is there something that happens in a person's life early on that's traumatic that create some sort of wound or some sort of opening that they try to, in some ways, medicate or fill that with the comfort of food? Or does this also happen late in life? I mean, what have you found in your research there?
Well, when it comes to things like, I think most people are familiar with anorexia and bulimia. Anorexia is when people restrict food and often are at a lower than normal set point for their weight. And bulimia, which is where people will have incidences of binging and then will do something to purge themselves of that food, whether that's, you know, throwing up after they eat or overuse of laxatives or even exercising. And with those, we often see them start mostly in girls in early adolescence, young adulthood. It's significantly higher in those age ranges than in other age ranges. With things like binge eating disorders, we can see that across the lifespan, though it tends to be also more in women. For whatever reason, we tend to see more food-related problems and disorders in women than we do in men. Now, in men, we tend to see higher prevalences of things like alcohol or sexual disorders, but for women, food seems to be kind of a sticky subject.
Right. Yeah, interesting. My guest today is Dr. Liana Bennett. I'll tell you what, I'll open the phones. If you want to join us, our toll-free number here is 877-ROME-777. That's 877-766-3777. If you have got a loved one that is struggling with an eating disorder, whether it's bulimia or anorexia or binge eating, and you want some direction or want to share your own experience, feel free to dial in. Great time to do it. We're running up against the clock, so when we come back, we'll talk more with Dr. Liana. And Doc, your website, if people do want more information, they can find you at aoccs.org, right?
That's correct, yeah.
That's the Alpha Omega Clinic.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and so we'll link over to it at relevantradio.com as well. When we come back, we'll talk more. We'll take a look at many of these eating disorders. I said, if you are struggling, It's your opportunity to join our conversation. A lot of things, too. There's a brain chemistry behind this. I think we have some hidden enemies, too, folks. It's not all our fault. The trans fats, the amount of calories that are packed into some of the food that we consume can really undermine us, and I think it's affecting our children as well. We'll take a look at that more when I return.
Do you have an old 401k, a 401k that you had with a previous job but have not moved over? That 401k has investments that are outdated, either barely keeping up or probably losing money. Your money. It's not a pot of gold, but it could be. Here is Steve Deeds, pioneer in the gold business since 1963.
We've set up a system that allows you to convert that forgotten paper 401k into a solid gold IRA. It's easy for you, and we'll take care of all the details. We all know that gold is the strongest hedge against inflation or deflation. Get portfolio insurance. Convert your former paper 401k or IRA out of dead dollars into solid physical gold.
And Morgan Gold makes it easy and takes care of all the details for you. Just call Morgan Gold now, 800-707-1352. Ask them any questions. Turn that forgotten 401k into a pot of gold. Call Morgan Gold, 800-707-1352, 800-707-1352.
Instead of the emphasis being on offering something, we could begin by teaching people that you have to be connected with the scriptures. Lent is, in a particular way, it's so important to be immersed in the word because of what culminates the season.
Wishing you a blessed Lenten season.
This is Relevant Radio.
The encouragement of the church to offer something up, to make a sacrifice, became clouded with negative judgments and negative connotation. That simply the furthest thing from the mind of the church is that the sacrifices, the little ways in which we say no to ourselves, is never something negative, but it's an opportunity to be drawn into Jesus' own experience of his gift of self on the cross. So the little things that I do, the little ways I say no to myself, can actually, they're actually the means by which I enter into that with him, because I share life with him through baptism.
We've had huge difficulties in the last 30 years of the church, in the Western world especially. There's no doubt about that.
The Most Reverend Charles J. Chaput, Archbishop of Denver, on Relevant Radio.
30 years ago, people generally sat in the pew and listened to what the priest said, and the church was identified with the priests and the sisters. Today, the church is, and this is the way the church has always really understood itself, is primarily the laity, and those of us who are clergy are there to serve the laity. And to see the new efforts at evangelization being led by the laity shows me the fruit and grace of the Second Vatican Council. This is the age of the educated laity. That isn't always the case. People think they're educated and they're not. But I think the church has done a very poor job in passing on the authentic apostolic faith to its people. We need to get better about that. We need to get better very, very soon.
This is Relevant Radio.
I really question whether you are Father Know-It-All. You tend to be Father Know-It-A-Lot. You'd really know a lot.
But not all.
I really enjoyed that 20-minute lecture on the Gospels.
From the common to the complicated, any question is fair game on Go Ask Your Father.
At the opening of the show, you were mentioning the possibility that clergy and bishops could be arrested.
Sure.
I would like to put a positive spin on that, because as Catholics, we have a tradition of standing up for our conscience and being arrested. Martin Luther King was arrested numerous times standing up against the government based on Christian conscience.
In the civil rights movement, the clergy were in the forefront of it.
Your go-to team for any question you may have about the Catholic faith.
Father Richard Simon, Father Rocky, Monsignor Stuart Sweatland. Go Ask Your Father. Go Ask Your Father. Weekdays at noon Central on Relevant Radio.
This is the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
All right, 26 now before the hour. Good afternoon, everyone. Hey, thanks for joining us. If you're just tuning in, we're speaking with Dr. Liana Bennett. She is a clinician at the Alpha Omega Clinic, and we're discussing the concept or the issue of addiction to food, to overeating, to bulimia, to anorexia, and also to the challenges that we face. Two-thirds of Americans struggle with their weight. Obesity is on the rise. And I want to go to the phones. We'll grab some calls from around the country here, doctor. But before we do, I'm just curious because it's not all our fault. I mean, that's what I want to say. I mean, if you look at our culture today, everything's supersized. You go to Burger King, you go to McDonald's, you get these giant portions. You've got buffets like Golden Corral and others where you can eat till you're blind. And it's often hard for people sometimes to put the governor on, to put the limits on. And, you know, okay, self-mastery is one thing at the buffets, but again, we got trans fats, we got highly packed calories in so many of the foods we eat, the soda that many people drink, 39 grams of soda in a can of Coca-Cola. You know, those things make staying thin relatively hard, and our kids are consuming this stuff, and they're growing up, I think, with an increased challenge. Can you address that issue for a moment? I know there's a psychology behind addiction to eating and these other disorders, but what about what we are ingesting and how much more difficult it is for this generation than it was generations past?
You know, I think that the attitude that our culture has about food is definitely influencing people, as well as the food that we're eating. You know, I think you're right that the quality of the food may not be as good, you know, be higher in a lot of artificial things, which, you know, some of those things we don't really know how they're affecting our bodies yet. And there is a chemical component to it, because the food that we intake and our reaction to that food, we do have, you know, our brain reacts to it in different ways.
Right.
So, you know, when we overeat, we feel, you know, we might feel happy while eating, and we might, but at the same time, then after eating, we might feel feelings of guilt. We might try to recreate those feelings of happiness by eating more, and sometimes that doesn't work very well because then we end up feeling worse afterwards. But just the very act of,
right,
you know, eating certain foods, you know, people can become addicted to things like sugar and caffeine, not in the same way as we become addicted to alcohol or other drugs and substances, but they can be hard for us to wean ourselves off of when they're so present in our diet.
And what's the best way to do it? Just abstain, fast, some self-discipline? I mean, separate ourselves from the sugar addiction or for whatever reasons. I gave up candy or sugar or sweets one Lent a long time ago. And after it was over and I had like a piece of dark chocolate or some ice cream, I couldn't believe how sickeningly sweet it tasted. It's like my taste buds were once again back. But if you consume a lot of sugar, you know, next thing you know, it's like it's not as sweet as it used to be, you know. But when you abstain from it, when you stay away from it, wow, it's really crazy in terms of how things change. And I'm wondering about that brain chemistry, and we'll go to the phones in a quick second. But, you know, dopamine is very powerful when it comes to addiction. You know, when people want to get high or drink, quite often there's that pleasure zone in the brain. What about food? Is there a dopamine release of some sort that when people eat, that they get that high or that sense, that pleasure that makes them want to go back for more?
Well, it's not as clear as with drugs which will directly activate the dopaminergic centers of our brain. Rather, it has more of an indirect effect.
Right.
So, you know, you mentioned that, you know, you giving up kind of sugar and sweets for Lent. For some people, those things are easier to do. And for you, it's probably just a matter of kind of getting those things out of your system. And probably after a while, you found yourself not craving it as much, and it became easier. And, you know, then towards the end, you know, right, when you were able to have chocolate again, you were like, oh, okay, this is great, sort of a treat. But oftentimes when people find themselves addicted to food, it's not just sort of the physical craving that they have, but there's also an emotional or a
right,
psychological craving, and that's a lot harder to let go of.
All right, let's go to the phones. Go ahead, doctor. I'm sorry to interrupt.
No, I was going to say, that's just where people kind of get stuck.
All right. We'll go to Wisconsin first. Amy, good afternoon. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
It's Amy. I am on my ninth and a half day of being in my first apartment, and fast food has caught up with me. How do I stop? It's like, literally, I was doing so good, and I crashed.
All right, so you're struggling. You're addicted to fast food, is what you're saying,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I'm struggling with the sugar. As soon as I see it, I want it.
All right. Good question. Doctor, can you help?
Well, one thing that I would wonder is have you been eating enough normally, you know, at home? Have you been getting a healthy breakfast, dinner, or will you kind of put off planning a meal and then suddenly you're overwhelmed with hunger and fast food is the easiest thing to get?
Well, my schedule is really hard. I wake up at 4 o'clock to prep my supper in the morning, and then I have to go out for my meetings all day. So then I get home really late and eat. And I don't. Yeah. I only eat one meal, and then I might find myself, I'm hungry. It's like, and then I go to sugar, like, mm-hmm. and I can't yeah. stop. Once I have one, I can't stop.
Yeah, yeah. It sounds like your body's gotten kind of in a bad habit of, you know, your schedule is making it difficult for you to make good food choices.
Yeah.
So something that I would probably suggest is, and, you know, depending on the flexibility of your schedule, to plan out perhaps over the weekend right. what you're going to eat throughout the week, and then making sure that you have a lot of snacks that are good and healthy with you. You know, almonds are really good for that, even if it's just kind of sneaking, you know, a few, you know, like a Clif Bar or something like that with you, something to keep your metabolism. You want to keep yourself from being, from hitting the feeling of being starving.
Right.
That's not a good place for our metabolism to be in, because then when you eat at the point of, you know, once your metabolism thinks it's starving, it's
yeah.
going to crave lots of food, and it's going to then store and hoard the fat from that food. So if you are in the process of eating small meals throughout the day, your metabolism doesn't get to the point where it's feeling starving and then thinks it needs to overeat.
Interesting. So, all right. Well, Amy, good luck there. Hang in there. You know, lots of little protein throughout the day, I think, will help suppress that appetite, mm-hmm. too. We'll go to Virginia this time, the beautiful East Coast. Sam, good afternoon. You're on the air.
Hi, good afternoon.
Welcome.
Thanks for having me on the show.
You're welcome.
I just wanted to touch on a topic that was Dr. Bennett was talking about a little bit earlier. And this question may be slightly out of the domain of your expertise, Dr. Bennett, but I was just wondering what cultural factors do you believe contribute to the high rate of eating disorders among women? You know, perhaps the way in which our culture constructs the image of what it means to be a beautiful woman or things such as this. I appreciate information on that. Thank you.
Great question.
Yeah, our culture is definitely influencing the rise of eating disorders that we're seeing. Eating disorders were pretty rare before the industrialization of our society. We didn't really see them.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't see people struggling with them. But the drive for thinness in beauty has really encouraged a lot of people's ideas that being thin is the best way to be or the perfect way to be. We see that particularly with things like anorexia and bulimia, where girls struggle with the way that they view their body.
Right.
And with anorexia, there seems to also be a drive for perfection that, you know, perhaps their life feels out of control, but the one thing that they can control is their food intake. You know, if nothing else, nobody can make them eat. And so it's not solely about being thin, although that is the main driving factor in eating disorders, but there's also a lot of issues of involving shame and guilt and self-esteem that influence them. But it's all wrapped up in this idea of thinness.
Are there different triggers that cause a woman to suffer from any of these eating disorders? And do they differ from the triggers that will set off a man?
Well, with anorexia, we tend to see people who are more rigid in their thinking, perhaps obsessive-compulsive already,
mm-hmm.
Very much focused on things like perfectionism, and who have a very negative self-evaluation. With something like bulimia, we often see like dieting vulnerabilities, so parental obesity or childhood obesity, or negative comments from family members about eating, appearance, or weight. So with anorexia, you don't necessarily have family members who are concerned mm-hmm. about weight, but it is a risk factor for things like bulimia.
Interesting. So, but eating disorders are more common in women than men, right?
Absolutely.
And what, why is that? Does it come down to self-esteem, confidence? I mean, what is it that separates the two?
Well, I think that there's an increasing need for women to be seen as thin. I think that mm-hmm. women tend to be, in our culture especially, idolized if they're, you know, extremely thin. Men, thinness is not usually the goal. We are seeing a rise in perhaps body image concerns in men that often involve wanting to bulk up. But there's a slightly different drive to there.
What about ethnic groups? Do black versus Caucasian, are eating orders equally spread across those, or do African Americans in this community have a different self-image than, let's say, Caucasians do?
We tend to see higher prevalences of anorexia and bulimia in Caucasians.
Yeah.
I think it is starting to change a little bit within the African-American and Asian communities. However, when it comes to things like obesity and binge eating disorders, they tend to be fairly similar across cultures. We're not seeing a lot of differences there.
Interesting. My guest today, folks, Dr. Liana Bennett. I need to take another break. I only have her for a few more moments. So if you want to join us, great time to call in. Our toll-free 877-766-3777. Easy way to remember that, 877-ROME-777. If you think your daughter or your son has an eating disorder, maybe they're exercising excessively or they're way too thin, or there might be signs that there is a problem and you're concerned, great time to call in. And if you're struggling yourself, maybe with binge eating or overeating or an addiction to food, great time to join the conversation. I said I only have the doctor for a few more moments. Feel free to use those numbers. We'll be back in just about a minute. Don't go away.
This is Father Rocky with a Catechetical Minute on Relevant Radio. Do you know the Ten Commandments by heart? If you don't, then how can you keep them? The Ten Commandments are a gift from God, and those who make the effort to keep them will be happy on earth and rejoice forever in heaven. Listen to what God told Moses about the Ten Commandments. In Deuteronomy 6, verses 6 through 9, he says, quote, "Take to heart these words which I enjoin on you today. Drill them into your children. Speak of them at home and abroad, whether you are busy or at rest. Bind them at your wrists as a sign, and let them be as a pendant on your forehead. Write them on the doorposts of your houses and on your gates." End quote. Did you know that Orthodox Jews still bind them on their foreheads as phylacteries? We, as Christians, should at least memorize the Ten Commandments. This has been a Catechetical Minute. To learn more about your faith, go to relevantradio.com, keyword cat.
Your Sherpa guide to the mountain of life. You're listening to The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
All right, 12 minutes before the hour. Good to be with you today. Hey, if you are college educated and a Catholic who wants more, maybe you're looking for some theological and spiritual formation from a faculty loyal to the magisterium, check out the Institute for Pastoral Theology. It might be right for you. You can go to IPT at avemaria.edu. If you're just joining us, good afternoon, everyone. I'm speaking with Dr. Liana Bennett, and we're dealing with the issue of binge eating, food addiction, bulimia, anorexia, and we're going to take your calls as well today. So feel free to join us, 877-ROME-777. Doctor, let's go right to the phones. Milwaukee, Wisconsin is online with us today. Pat, good afternoon.
Hi. Listen, I was listening to the different eating disorders, but what about the people who are, like me, obese, and I think eat, and it's connected to some, like you said before, some sort of
low self-esteem.
And so, you know, how can we go about changing that so that, you know, because I've tried every diet. I've even had stomach surgery, and I've gained it back.
Wow.
Yeah, that must be so difficult for you to have struggled with it for so long and to feel like everything that you've done hasn't really gained the rewards that you've been looking for. It sounds like, from what you're telling me, and there could be, you know, medical things that I'm not aware of, but it sounds like the eating has been something that you've been used to doing and that you... But not eating has been something that's been really hard for you, and controlling the food has been really hard. And that sounds like something that maybe, I don't know if you have, if it's a, you know, a family lifestyle issue that, you know, you are all sort of, you know, together overeating, or if, you know, if it's been hard to make dietary changes because, you know, oftentimes certain family members, you know, they don't really want to eat green beans instead of the fried chicken, you know. that can be kind of hard, too. But I would, you know, you mentioned low self-esteem. You know, sometimes it helps to look for the causes of the low self-esteem beyond merely weight-related ones. So, you know, from where does that low self-esteem come from, you know, is... Are there things that happen in childhood, family relational problems, things like that? Okay. Does that make any sense to you?
It does. It does.
All right. Well, Pat, hang in there. You know, I hope it helps. I'll put you on my prayer list. I'll pray for you too, because I know what a hard struggle that must be for you to constantly deal with. And it is a cross. So you may want to check out Dr. Bennett's site as well. It's AOCCS.org. Let me go down south this time to Alabama. Robin's listening to us there. Hi, Robin.
Hi.
Hey, good afternoon. I can. Welcome. Thanks for calling.
Okay. Well, I'm someone who is at least 100 pounds overweight. I'm 49 years old. I've had this problem probably since I was born. I've always had this problem. It has nothing to do with culture. It has nothing to do with the times. Right. It has nothing to do with any of those things. I am someone who has struggled and struggled and struggled forever. Mm-hmm. And I would just like to hear what she has to say. I mean, I truly believe that I have an addiction. I've done everything you can think of, Catholic programs as well. I don't know. I don't know how to, you know, because people are calling and saying different things, and I'm sitting there rolling my eyes thinking, you know, when you can't even make it past breakfast.
Yeah.
And it has nothing to do with, oh, I need to eat almonds, you know. I mean, this is something that drives me. It's definitely emotional. I get very afraid. You know, there's a lot of trust issues with God with this for me. I've heard that it's strictly a spiritual problem, and I just want to hear what you have to say about that.
I would say that it sounds like you're dealing with a lot of different things. It's probably not... You know, just it's not just about the food for you, and it's not just a matter of changing your diet. Because if it were only about changing your diet, you would have done it already. You know, I can tell that, you know, you've really tried and you've really worked to try.
Well, I was on a 12-step program about 20 years ago, and I was able to be abstinent, as they call it, and I lost a lot of weight and kept it off for 5 years.
Wow.
And I always said, well, I'm just going to go. I need to go back to that food plan. I didn't eat any sugar, flour, wheat, caffeine, alcohol, because they said it's strictly an addiction. And once these substances get into your system, you know, you crack like an addict would. And I definitely was able to eat that way, and I lost weight. However, I had about a $12,000 or $13,000 credit card. I kept buying jewelry and all this stuff.
Right.
So it was like I just went from one addiction to the next addiction.
Okay.
And it was like, there's obviously something else, but I just don't know. I've been through everything.
Robin, let me let let Dr. Bennett respond to that. I mean, what do you do? Because this is a common factor with a lot of people. They'll trade one addiction for another, and Robin's back to her old one. Again, this is the most important question of all, and we've addressed it a little bit, but How do you get to the root of what your problem is? Is there a place to turn to get help? How do you identify the roots of it? I mean, some people struggle with addiction because they've been deeply wounded or they've been abused or molested or something has happened that was traumatic in their life. How do they identify what the problem is, and then what are the steps to begin the healing process?
Right. Well, I think that, as you mentioned, that, you know, people can bounce from one addiction to another. And that's what happens when you treat the addiction alone. But people rarely develop addictions in a vacuum. There's almost always something that's driving that need. And as you mentioned, you know, things like low self-esteem, oftentimes abuse. Sexual abuse is not uncommon to be seen, you know, driving various types of addictions. And I think that that has to be the first place to start, you know, is looking into yourself to find, you know, what's going on with this. And not dealing with it in isolation. I think that that's one of the wonderful things that the 12-step programs tend to encourage, is working together with other people. And whether that means working within a group or finding a therapist that you trust, you know, even if the first step is just telling some friends about it, talking to somebody, you know, maybe starting with a spiritual director or something like that. But, you know, if the wounds are really deep, you know, sometimes, you know, seeking help is the best thing that people can do.
All right. Well, Robin, hang in there. You know, okay. you may want to go back to your old plan and get the weight under control, but also maybe you should speak to a counselor that could probably maybe help you in this journey as well. But I'm going to be praying for you. Lines are really busy right now, so we'll move along and take a few more calls. Before we do, though, let me give the website for you, Diana, in case people want to get a hold of you. It's AOCCS.org. And, of course, we have a link at relevantradio.com. The keyword is Drew. I only have a few moments left, and I'll take as many calls as we possibly can. Robin, it's good to hear from you there in Alabama. I appreciate the call, okay? Let me go to Wisconsin this time. Melissa, good afternoon. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for taking my phone call.
You're welcome.
I have a 12-year-old daughter who is super, super thin. Doctors are really worried about her. Mm-hmm. She has zero body fat, and she is afraid to gain any kind of weight. She's terrified, and I don't know where it comes from.
Interesting.
And I don't know how to deal with this because she refuses to eat.
Yeah. Right. Well, okay, so it sounds like you've already had her evaluated by medical doctors, and they're concerned about her lack of weight gain?
Yes.
Okay, and I think that probably the best thing to do, the safest thing to do for your daughter, and it sounds like you've addressed this problem, you know, as best you could, as quickly as you could, is probably to bring her to someone who is a specialist in working with families and kids with eating problems. It doesn't necessarily mean that she would necessarily be diagnosed with an eating disorder, but they would be able to help you and your family work with her. For young kids, especially around that age, working with the family is critical and can show great benefits.
Mm-hmm.
She may be, you know, confused and scared and, you know, not understanding, you know, what's going on and
mm-hmm.
why you're asking her to eat and do these things and force these things on her. But, you know, just being able to show her that love and, you know, how much you care about her, I think that those things are really important. Being able to keep in contact with the physicians about her weight,
mm-hmm.
because that's the scary thing about eating problems, is that they can potentially be life-threatening. And the best thing that you can do is address them early on. And it sounds like that's what you're doing, and you're doing exactly the right thing by seeking help with your daughter.
Okay.
All right. Well, Melissa, hang in there. Keep praying for her, too. I know you're a good mom. You'll work this out, okay?
Yes, thank you very much.
We'll pray for your daughter coming up at the top of the hour here. Hey, just a final thought. I've got less than a minute, but yeah, maybe this last piece of advice from mm-hmm. you. I have a friend back east who comes out of a family life where her husband was an alcoholic. She has lots of personal struggles, you know, and she is a beautiful, beautiful girl. I mean, both physically and inside. But she exercises nonstop and barely ever eats. And we all think, my gosh, she never eats. Look, she eats that little bit. What do you do if you think somebody may have an eating problem? How do you address them? And you know, what's the best approach like that? Because, I mean, some people exercise, they take it to an extreme. You know, I think they're treading the line, you know?
Right. Well, that can be one of the hardest situations is when you see a friend or a family or a member or a loved one who's struggling with an eating disorder, and they're not 12, and you can't forcefully take them into treatment. But when at that age, you know, just talk to them, express them lovingly your concerns, and pray for them.
All right, well, that's good advice. Communication first, and of course, we'll pray as well. Hey, doctor, stay on the line. I want to talk to you. Short break. We're going to be back on the other side. We'll take your prayer petition. Stay with us.